from 90.1 WFYI Public Radio. Welcome to The Art of the Matter, made possible by the ongoing support from listeners like you. And from the Palladium at the Center for the Performing Arts, opening in January 2011.
Hello and welcome to The Art of the Matter. I'm Sharon Gamble. The music for today's show is courtesy of the Buscelli Wallerab Jazz Orchestra from their Heart and Soul album, available through Owl Studios at owlstudios.com.
And I'm Travis DiNicola. Today I'll find out about plans for the new Vonnegut Library.
And I'll get a preview of this year's Decorator Show House.
And I'll chat with Justin Wade about Young Actors Theater. Plus, there's our arts calendar we call
What'll We Do? All that and more right after the latest news from NPR. Arguably the most important writer to come from Indianapolis, Kurt Vonnegut continues to be read, respected, and revered by many in our community. Since his death in 2007, there's been much talk about how to remember him and honor his legacy in his hometown. And now it is official, the Kurt Vonnegut Memorial Library will be opening up in the fall of this year in downtown Indy. Travis DiNicola spoke with the library's executive director, Julia Whitehead, and board members Casey Norwalk and Kip Tu about the library and an upcoming Night of Vonnegut fundraiser.
Julia, Kip, Casey, welcome to Art of the Matter. Great to have the three of you in the studio today.
Thanks, Travis.
Thrilled to be here.
Thank you.
And some congratulations are in order. You actually have a space now. I mean, I know that's kind of news. I mean, even though it hasn't been fully developed, and we'll get to that in a minute, but where IMOCA used to be is the space that the new first ever Vonnegut Memorial Library will be moving into. Let's start with, Julia, you're the executive director of the organization. Casey and Kip, you're both on the board of directors. Let's start actually with, what is your personal interest in this? Are the three of you just great fans of Kurt Vonnegut? Did you love his writing? Do you have a favorite book? You know, I mean, how did the, sort of, you know, the three of you come together and working on this project?
I loved Vonnegut's books, the books I read earlier in my life. But I was more interested in his life story, and I learned more about that through his interviews that I had seen and heard. But I was really interested in the way he, you know, served his country, and then came back from that experience and turned it into a very positive thing, promoting peace and spreading the word. And I just thought he was a very interesting person who deserved to have some sort of memorial, especially a memorial in Indianapolis, where, of course, he is from.
Mm-hmm. Kip, how about you?
Slaughterhouse Five is one of the most impactful books I've ever read, and I just am so thrilled that Kurt Vonnegut's from Indianapolis because that book was so impactful to me, and to have him from the same hometown that you're in it made it very important, I think, that we honor an Indiana treasure, which was Kurt Vonnegut, and I think that the city will be enriched by this library. Our cultural focus will be enriched by having a Kurt Vonnegut library. I think it will be a destination spot for people who come to Indianapolis to visit for conventions and other things. It'll be one more thing that folks will be able to stop in, because he is a internationally recognized author, one of the great authors of the 20th century, and he happened to grow up here. So I think it's important for us to offer that to the rest of the world.
Absolutely. And Casey, what brings you onto the board of this?
I've been a huge fan of Vonnegut since high school, and I have always been fascinated with Vonnegut's take on Indianapolis, and I thought it would be an awesome honor to have a library here in Indianapolis memorializing him. And I got involved as soon as I heard about it.
Now, did any of you ever have the chance to meet him? I know that certainly some of the people who are involved in your advisory committee and board knew him or had a chance, but any of the three of you? Or?
I met him one time. He was sitting out in front of the Hilton Garden Theater, or Hilton Garden Hotel on the corner of Pennsylvania and Market. He was sitting there smoking a cigarette. I think he was in town for some reason. I don't know what. And a friend of mine was with me. He goes, "That looks like Kurt Vonnegut." And we turned around and looked at him, and it sure was, and we both went up and talked to him for a couple of minutes. So that was my only meeting.
Well, that's still pretty cool. You know, he in some ways, there's so many questions that I want to ask just based on the things that the three of you said. But I think what I want to start with here is, you know, his relationship with Indianapolis was an interesting one. It was sort of a, you know, a love-hate one at times. Though it seems as though, you know, especially in the past maybe dozen years or so, he seemed to embrace his connection with Indianapolis a lot more. He was here a lot more often talking about it. What do you think Vonnegut would think about having a library in Indianapolis for him?
Well, it's interesting. We have members of our board that we've asked that direct question of, and I think the thing that they've tried to impart to us who didn't know him, the important thing, is that he wouldn't want to make a big deal about him. Mm-hmm. But I think the sort of his life purpose, I think he would very much want us to try to carry on. And of course, everybody has their own interpretation of what he was trying to impart with a message. But I think... we actually had a meeting this week to talk about that, or actually at the end of last week to talk about that. And I think part of it is what we want to do is celebrate his life and make sure that the messages that he was trying to send move down to the next generation.
And adding to that, when I came up with this idea in November of 2008, I wasn't aware that there was a group within Indianapolis that was trying to plan some sort of Vonnegut Center. And when I contacted Mark Vonnegut and we talked about a memorial for his father, he said absolutely this should be in Indianapolis, that he felt that Kurt would want it to be here.
Mm-hmm. Well, and certainly, I mean, his ties are strong here. Went to Shortridge, of course, the building, the Athenaeum. Many people talk about was his great uncle or great grandfather that.
Grandfather.
Who designed that,
yes.
The architecture of that, and of course, relatives of his who continue to live in the city. It's to have a space like this that is, you know, devoted to one person. Now, and I'm not sure how many books Vonnegut wrote, but, you know, when you think of a library, the first thing you think of is many books, thousands perhaps of books or hundreds of thousands of books. And my guess is it's not going to be thousands of books necessarily. I mean, he wrote...
It's not going to be a library in the traditional sense of walking into the Marion County Public Library.
Sure.
It's going to be, I would say, more like a museum. Mm-hmm. But it's going to be sort of a combination of the two as we envision it. We'll have exhibits there. Kurt Vonnegut also was a prolific painter, mm-hmm. And so we'll have some of that work on display for people to look at. But it'll be a celebration of his life in some respects and also imparting his message. So, I mean, we'll have books there because mm-hmm. that's part of a library, of course, but it's not going to be the central part of the library, the actual books. But every book that he wrote and every painting that he painted, I think, does have some sort of meaning he was trying to express, and we're going to try to help facilitate that with this structure that we have.
Tell me a bit about the structure. I mentioned earlier that it's in the space that it's a building owned by Katz and Korn that the Indianapolis Museum of Contemporary Art used to be in, had moved out of. So you're going to have essentially your own space, not totally freestanding, but your own space dedicated just to this. How is that going to work? How do you envision it? Julia?
So we have 1,100 square feet, and the space is divided up. Very nicely for mm-hmm. what we're trying to do. It's just perfect for where we are at our stage of development. There will be an art gallery space where we will also be able to have public events. There will be a gift shop, and then there will be...
Where you can buy his books?
Buy his books, and, of course, Vonnegut Library mm-hmm. dot.
Uh-huh.
You gotta have the stuff,
I've
right?
seen lots of T-shirts around town. People walk around town with T-shirts
Wonderful.
Saying, I'm helping to build the Vonnegut
yes.
Library.
Yes.
Those are great.
Glad
you've actually seen them.
I have seen them. Yes, I have.
Terrific.
And people can go to our website, mm-hmm. www.vonnegutlibrary.org, and... I don't think we do have T-shirts available online.
Well, it sounds like you should.
But we will
we will soon.
And we're also going to have a reading room mm-hmm. in the library.
Yes. And with a few thousand books. Okay. So yes, that piece of the library will be covered.
I'm excited about seeing some of his work as well. As you mentioned, he was really interesting painter, illustrator, had some shows, in fact, up at the Indianapolis Arts Center, and a lot of people sort of recognize his, you know, very sort of quick, whimsical sketches, lots of sort of curly cues and things. It'd be great to see some of that work as well. Will you be able to have some on loan or as part of a permanent collection?
Both, actually. Mm-hmm. We are fortunate to have his artistic collaborator involved in our project. He is one of our board members, and so we're definitely working out the details of, you know, what will be loaned and what will be mm-hmm. shown and available for the public to purchase.
And then I also heard that you're going to have sort of historical artifacts of his or things from his life. Is that true?
I mean, yes, that's
no baby boots or anything. Or maybe,
we'd
I don't
love
know.
To have them. If anyone out there happens to have something, please contact us. But we're slowly collecting what we can, mm-hmm. and we're happy to take donations. Just recently, we received a signed first edition of Breakfast of Champions on loan, mm-hmm. and we very much appreciate that. As you can imagine, in our beginning stages, we desperately need these types of items to fill our collection.
Sure. Now, any thoughts of also showing, I'm thinking, can't be mentioned earlier, Slaughterhouse 5. That's also one of my favorite, not just Vonnegut books, but movies based on a Vonnegut book. I love the music, the Bach-Brandenburg concertos used all throughout it. It's a really fantastic film. Will you be able to do things like show that? Or?
Yeah, well, we have actually already shown that film at the Athenaeum, and we will continue to partner with the Athenaeum for some of these events. I'm not sure. We haven't really talked about showing films at the new space. Mm-hmm. We'll sort that out.
Well, the Athenaeum has been a great partner for you, and that's that's a perfect place to segue into an event that you're having coming up on May 8th, the Night of Vonnegut, which is taking place at the Athenaeum, which is going to feature, among other things, a Vonnegut look-alike contest.
Yes, the look-alike contest.
Any of the three of you competing?
I don't think
shaking.
No, I don't have enough hair.
So tell me about the Night of Vonnegut celebration, because that is coming up in just a few weeks, and tickets are available.
So the Night of Vonnegut event is our first major fundraiser, and we're fortunate to have a piece of Vonnegut's artwork given to us by the family to donate to our organization. So we look forward to people showing up.
Will you be auctioning that off?
Yes, we are. Wow. Silent auction for the piece of Vonnegut art. And there will be jazz mm-hmm. with your Rathskeller dinner.
Tim Brickley?
Tim Brickley. Mm-hmm. And the Tim Frickley Trio. We will have, like you said, the look-alike contest, a panel discussion with friends of Vonnegut. Those who knew him very well will be on stage to talk about their experiences with him, sharing funny stories and insightful.
That's right. And as we mentioned before, there's certainly a lot of people. My guess is I bet David Hoppe from Nouveau will probably be a
David
part of that.
David Hoppe has agreed to participate mm-hmm. in this, and we are thrilled about that. He is a great supporter of mm-hmm. our organization. And we will also have dramatic readings of Vonnegut's work and a trivia game, sort of a Family Feud-style trivia game. We're looking forward to that, and we are still taking contestants for that, so visit our website to get more information about that. And we're also still looking for contestants for the look-alike contest. We do have a couple of people right now, but we'd like to have folks, even if you need to put on a wig, we know you're out there, mm-hmm. and there are prizes. So,
mm-hmm. And certainly this is, you encourage people who are Vonnegutians as well as people maybe who are just discovering Kurt Vonnegut for the first time.
That's an important piece of our mission, is to teach other people about Vonnegut's life and works. So we definitely welcome newcomers. He's just a great humorist and very go ahead. I'm trying to think of a way to describe him to people who don't know his work. I think he touches everyone in a different way, but I have not known anyone who has read his work who does not like it. Mm-hmm. I've heard people say he's very controversial, but I really think people like controversial,
I mean, certainly very, very clever in his writing. Casey, let me ask you this. As you serve on this board and work towards opening up this library, which is due to open up this fall, correct?
Yes, sometime before the end of 2010.
What element, Casey, are you looking forward to the most, either with the events or maybe an exhibit at the library or how you're participating?
I'm looking forward to showing off Vonnegut and his work to everyone in the city and everyone who visits Indianapolis. We're hoping to make this an attraction, and it's also going to be right off the cultural trail, so we're going to hope to tie it in with other downtown organizations.
Do you know, has there been interest from other cities or, I don't know, fan clubs or scholars or what have you as far as the work that you're doing? Kip, you're nodding your head there.
Yeah, we have had interest from all over the world, actually. People have gotten on our website to discover memoriallibrary.org, and I think that we anticipate as we move forward, if we do everything the right way, we'll get international interest to continue. I mean, the important thing here is that Kurt Vonnegut is a Hoosier, and I dare say maybe one of the most important and famous Hoosiers we've ever produced, certainly in the arts community, and I think it's wise for us here in Indiana to invest in this so that we can share our legacy, which is Kurt Vonnegut, with the rest of the world.
Travis DiNicola with the Kurt Vonnegut Memorial Library's Executive Director Julia Whitehead and board members Casey Norwalk and Kip Chu. The Night of Vonnegut takes place on May 8th at the Athenaeum. For more information, visit VonnegutLibrary.org, VonnegutLibrary.org, or call 652-1954, 652-1954. You're listening to The Art of the Matter on WFYI 90.1 FM Public Radio.
The Marx Brothers, Helen Hayes, Alfred Lunt, and Lynn Fontaine all visited 4270 North Meridian Street, but maybe not at the same time. You may know the house as the former residence of Booth Tarkington, but this spring it's wearing the title of Decorator's Show House. Decorator's Show House is a project of the St. Margaret's Hospital Guild, and the funds raised all go towards programs and services of Wishart Hospital. Sharon Gamble invited Jenny Moy, president, and Sally Sebekis, decorator chair, to give us a peek behind the scenes of the Decorator's Show House.
Well, I'm always eager about the Decorator's Show House, but I'm especially eager about this particular one, and it's had quite the history, and while a lot of people know it as the Booth Tarkington home, it wasn't always. In fact, I read a funny story about the daughter of the couple that built it who said, "Why are they calling it that?" It was built when and who built it, and where they live, I mean, what they did for a living, why they chose to live there, what their lifestyle was, why they chose this particular style of architecture.
Sure. My understanding is that a woman named Mrs. Maria Hare, who was a widow at the time, built the home in 1911. So we're coming up on 100 years. We like to say we're dressing up the house for its birthday. Mrs. Hare had six children and owned the entire block. So that would go from Meridian west to Illinois, and then from 43rd on the north to 42nd on the south side. So she owned the entire block, built the home. There was a stable in the back at the time, of course, and a paddock that went back toward Illinois. She lived there until 1923, at which time the Tarkingtons moved in. That was Mr. and Mrs. Tarkington, and they lived there until 1950. Booth Tarkington did pass away in 1946, but his widow stayed on until 1950.
Mrs. Hare built a pretty good-sized home for herself. I'm guessing by the time she built it, her children were mostly grown and gone, but she must have wanted to do some entertaining to build a home of this size.
Well, she did have the six children there for some time, and I don't know exactly. I don't know their ages when they did come in. The house, when we acquired the house for Decorator's Show House, it did have eight bedrooms. And in the process of this project, one of those bedrooms has been turned into, actually, it's very fun. It's being turned into the master bath, and the previous master bath is being turned into the master closet. So that'll be a very, very interesting thing for people to see the before and after pictures there.
Nice. And it, just to put this in context, this is a little funny by today's standards, but this was only, am I correct, this was only the second, or it's the second oldest residence constructed north of 38th Street.
That's correct. The first home that was built north of 38th was torn down when they built Tarkington Towers. And so this is now the oldest home north of 38th Street, which makes it quite unique.
So, and the sound you hear in the background is a phone ringing, because as I'm having this conversation with Sally and Jenny, it's mere hours before the first of many events is going to go on. So Jenny, just again, it's kind of hard to picture, but in 1911, the bridge over Fall Creek at Meridian Street was built in 1904. So this was the suburbs?
Well, it certainly would be sort of out in the country at that time.
Wow, that's just stunning. Yeah. That is so stunning. Walk us through, because we all put a lot of focus on the Decorator Show House for the weeks when you can go in and see the result. But this is a year-round endeavor. I know you guys are working behind the scenes, you know, for the entire year. How do you select a home? How do you line up everything that's going to happen to it? And what do the residents or homeowners do? What is their role in the lead up?
It is a very long process. We started looking for a home for this year's Decorator Show House in 2008, actually.
Wow.
So we learned about available homes in a number of ways, whether through a realtor or somebody knows somebody, or this particular home we got onto. We'd looked at this house before when a previous owner had it, and it didn't seem like a really, really good fit for us with that homeowner. But the home had recently been purchased by a new couple, and Sally actually had encountered them when they were going through the 2008 Decorator Show House. And Tim Sadler came up to Sally and said, "How do you get to be a Decorator Show House?"
Uh-huh.
And she said, "Let me write that down." And we did look at a number of different homes, but the Sadlers were wonderful to work with, and the home had so much history, and was just, it was inspirational to be in it. And so that's why how we selected that home. We do have some criteria to be a Decorator Show House. It needs to be a home that's obviously large enough to have a lot of areas for our decorators to come in and transform. It has to have two staircases.
And so people can come and leave and not
exactly.
That
just is for flow.
Yeah.
And it needs to be in a location or have a name or something that will
have some degree of notoriety.
Some intrinsic interest in the public.
Yeah.
And I think we found, you know, all of those with this home.
You know, I remember reading an article, and I think it was billed as a preview in the Star some number of months ago, thinking, "Oh, Sadlers, you are very brave souls. You've just moved into this house. What are you thinking?" I'm just thinking, anytime you become the stewards of an older home, there is so much to do, no matter how well the previous owner has taken care of it. And I'm just thinking, yeah, this is good for you, jumping in with both feet, and you're just going to do this. It seems to me it's a gorgeous, gorgeous Tudor style home, right?
Yes.
How many square feet is it? Pretty big house.
We have it at 11,000 square feet.
Yeah.
Yes. And there are four floors. There are three floors up, and then we have the lower level, the basement.
And probably the most famous couple who have lived in it were the Tarkingtons, who loved to entertain. And they had a number of pretty famous people stop by there, come to dinner, come to salons, that sort of thing, right?
Yeah, that's one of the fun things about the house. The Marx Brothers were friends of the Tarkingtons and frequent visitors. Helen Hayes was there, Lunton Fontaine, James Whitcomb Riley. It really served during his time period sort of as an artist's salon, you know, where these creative people would come and, you know, think great creative thoughts.
And it will still be doing the same thing while under your tutelage, so to speak.
Also, the Tarkingtons did live in the home, but during a few months of the year, they went to Maine every year and lived in Kennebunkport, where they had a house and a boat. So this was their main residence, and yet they did have the other place to travel to.
Now, they would have had, I'm guessing, and possibly Mrs. Hare before them, some sort of live-in help, cook, chauffeur, butler,
yes.
Something like that. Are those quarters still there? Have they been converted to modern bedrooms or whatever?
That's a good question. In the home, when the Tarkingtons were there, his secretary actually lived in the home or possibly in the carriage house in the back of mm-hmm. the property. We are not using the carriage house this time for Decorator's Show House, although we did use it in 1985. But because of its construction, it's not a good public sort of access going and coming location for people to be going up those stairs,
mm-hmm.
very steep stairs,
very
and,
functional.
And down.
Yeah.
Just wouldn't have worked well for our public. But back to the issue of the help, we're not exactly sure how many housekeepers or cooks they might have had, but they did have Tarkington's secretary. She lived with them because as he aged, he was losing his vision, and so instead of being able to write himself, he did dictate to his secretary, and apparently for many hours, and that was up on the third floor of the house, which now is converted to the family room.
Cool. How do you select the designers?
We invite a whole group of designers that are on our database to a coffee where they all arrive, and during the same 2 to 3 hours, they all roam the house, and they select rooms that they would like to decorate. They find inspiration in back hallways and, of course, in living rooms and dining rooms, and they write those down, give them to us, and then our design board, which is a group of representatives from both the guild and the designers. Our design board makes decisions and makes assignments to the designers. And if they accept that, we go into a series of conversations with them, and they propose their plans to us. And, of course, we have to present those plans to the homeowner
sure.
so that the homeowner is in agreement, especially for anything, or I should say in particular for anything, that is permanent to the structure.
Well, that's what I want to ask, because decorator, I generally think of things that can be removed, furnishings, paintings,
sure.
and so forth. But sometimes there are bigger projects.
Sometimes there are bigger projects, and in the last decade, we've had a number of remodeling projects that are going on. The homeowners are entitled to the communications and contacts that we have in the community. We have wonderful resources in the community that support us. Porter Paint supplies all the paint for the house, every room. Delta Faucet provides all the faucets and the fixtures for the room, for all the areas. So we have wonderful connections, so it's a terrific situation for the homeowner. The issue of what stays and what goes is, again, a series of conversations that the designers have with the homeowners. And they propose, for example, window treatments and say, would you like to have these?
Mm-hmm.
Is this a fabric that you would choose?
Mm-hmm.
And if so, then they make that agreement.
How do you ensure, or maybe you don't, but often in a historic home, the homeowner will want some kind of unity of design.
Mm-hmm.
How does that work?
Well, the design part usually leaves the house. In other words, a homeowner doesn't buy every sofa, every chair, every dining room table, every whatever. That's not going to happen. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, well...
It hasn't happened in 49 years.
No, it hasn't. You're absolutely right. So the homeowners do not have influence on the actual furnishings that are in a room.
Mm-hmm.
But they do have influence if, let's say, a designer would like to paint the bedroom red, and that's not a color that the homeowner would have chosen. So they have conversations about that. Either the designer would change their mind, or after show house, if the designer is committed to that color mm-hmm. or that choice of flooring or whatever it might be, it will be changed after show house is over and before the homeowners move back in.
Porter Paints is supplying the 5-gallon can of kills or bins or whatever in that case.
Yeah.
Well, that's one of the jobs of the design board, too, is to look at those proposed designs and to ensure that there's at least some sort of flow to the house, so it doesn't look like you're going from, you know, one little showcase to a
so you're not going from a Danish
showcase.
Modern dining mm-hmm. room to a Victorian parlor or mm-hmm. or
right.
or from pink to orange to lime green or something.
Right.
Yeah.
The homeowners move out at some point.
They do. That's in our contract with them and our guild, St. Margaret's Hospital Guild, mm-hmm. that. Organizes and puts on this project. We assist them in that, and here's another one of our wonderful community supporters, Stewart's Moving Company, will move our family, our homeowners, to a rental property, and we provide a rental allowance for them
mm-hmm.
for approximately 4 months, and Stewart's will move them out and will store their items and then moves them back in. So that's a terrific gift both to us and to the homeowner.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And what an adventure. What mm-hmm. an adventure for that family, too. And I'm picturing them sneaking back in and peeking around and saying, what's going on in here?
Yeah. Well, there's been a little bit of that. You know, one of the real pluses for a homeowner is that they have all of this going on in their house, and they don't have to be in charge of it.
They don't have to quit their day jobs and be general contractors.
Right.
Yeah. And as excited as I am about the details of the house, I also want to ask what it is a benefit, and what does the guild use the money for?
100% of the proceeds of the Decorator Show House go directly to the programs and services of Wishard Health Services, which, as you know, is our safety net health system here in Marion County. And over the last 103 years that we have been in existence, we've donated over $10 million
wow.
to Wishard.
Wow.
And, you know, have been very instrumental in some things like starting the occupational therapy and physical therapy departments. We most recently have been working on a program called Embrace, which we started 3 years ago with the proceeds of the 2006 Decorator Show House, which Embrace provides wraparound services for women with cancer.
Hmm.
And so everything from scarves and hats to lotions and you know, the things that are not the medical things that
right.
those women need. But
that still provide comfort and...
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. And that's been very successful. It's won awards. We're very proud of that. And we've helped the hospital buy a mobile mammography van. One of the things we started last year is called Haven of Hope, which is a center for families who have a loved one in the trauma center.
Mm.
And so it allows them to stay in the hospital and be near their loved one while undergoing, you know, that crucial treatment.
Right.
So there's a wide variety of things we do, but it's all for Wishard.
Yeah.
And we are entirely a volunteer organization. We don't have staff to pay. It's all for Wishard.
That is a lot of work you guys are doing for a great cause.
It is a lot of work. There are wonderful women in this organization, and wonderful, we have wonderful life members who may not be actively working with us to develop the project and see the show house through the months and months that it takes to do it, but they're there for us when we open the house and they come to host us and they come back and love to share their memories of the previous 49 years of the house. And it's very fun. We still have in our life membership the woman who brought the project idea to us 49 years ago. And so next year we'll have a big 50th birthday party.
Sharon Gamble with Jenny Moy, President and Sally Sebekis, Decorator Chair of the 2010 Decorators Showhouse. This year's home is the former Booth Tarkanian home at 4270 North Meridian Street. There are 35 decorated areas inside and 9 areas outside to inspire your own design adventures. The house is open daily except Mondays from April 24th through May 9th, plus special programs including breakfast tours, luncheons, and twilight events. All proceeds benefit Wishart Hospital and its programs and services. Find out much, much more and get your tickets at showhouseindy.com. Again, showhouseindy.com.
Hey, Travis.
Yes, Sharon.
Remember what this weekend is?
This weekend?
This very weekend? Big weekend in visual arts?
I was thinking the pledge drive is over, but it's also the Stutz Open House weekend.
That's exactly right. So whether you're listening to us on Friday night or Saturday afternoon, you can still go there. And we have other things to tell you about on our calendar that we call
What Will We Do? That's right. Yeah, great event. Always fun. Definitely worth going to either Friday night or Saturday down at the Stutz Building.
Goes till 10:30 Friday night and 2 to 7 on Saturday.
I want to mention next weekend, the Cabaret at the Columbia Club is presenting a marvelous party with Steve Ross. Steve has been dubbed the Crown Prince of New York Cabaret, and he is going to be paying tribute to Indiana's own Cole Porter. Perfect music for cabaret style, both next Friday and Saturday nights, the 30th and May 1st, at Cabaret at the Columbia Club. I am looking forward to this. You can get more information at thecabaret.org. This should be just a great, great night.
Very good. Hey, the Hoosier Salon Gallery at the Morris Butler House is doing its first Friday event on May 7th from 6 to 9 with artwork by Ron Mack, Jennifer Hughes, and David Owen. So you can go to the first Friday night on the 7th from 6 to 9, but you can also see that art all month long, 10 to 3, Wednesday through Friday at the Morris Butler House.
This is a really cool thing going on this Saturday night, the 24th. It's at the Toby at the IMA. It is fine. Everything is fine. An evening with Crispin Glover. Yes, that's right. The Crispin Glover, the actor, is going to be there at 7 p.m. Again, Saturday night at the Toby. Seating is limited.
Woohoo! Hey, your opportunity to see some of the great Lincoln artifacts is still going on at the Indiana State Museum with Charity for All. The Lincoln Financial Foundation collection runs through July 25th, and this includes a number of very personal items. So you get a different lens to see a great president through with Charity for All at the Indiana State Museum.
So installation performance piece going on in Irvington at the Urban Theater this weekend as well. Saturday night is the last performance at 8 p.m. Again, the Irving Theater is on East Washington Street in the Irvington neighborhood, and this is from the Ball State Department of Architecture and Butler University working together to present Salvaged Layers, which sounds just really cool to me, sort of about repurposing fabric and from the RCA Dome, and it uses Melly Hoppe and her dance students and movement and performance, and who knows what it's all going to be like, but it's taking place at the Irving, 8 p.m. Saturday night.
And speaking of fascinating visual art, there's a new exhibit on view at the Indianapolis Art Center called Freaky Forest, which is artwork by Casey Roberts using a technique that dates to the Civil War era called cyanotype. It's a photochemical contact print process, and it involves baking soda and bleach and peroxide, and you'll just have to go to see what this results in. And that's going on through June 6th
at the Indianapolis Arts Center.
That sounds great. Last thing I want to mention, coming up this week on the 26th, up at Meridian Music in Carmel, there's going to be a concert at 7 p.m. again on the 26th, featuring one of our friends, Melissa Gallant, on harp, as well as there'll be a flutist and violist and violin and cello, and a lovely evening of some Mozart and Mendelssohn and lots of other great music up at Meridian Music, 7 p.m. on the 26th. And there is a lot more going on, but we will be back next week to tell you about it on What Do We Do?
You're listening to The Art of the Matter, a weekly show about the arts in Indianapolis and Central Indiana. Your hosts are Sharon Gamble and Travis DiNicola. If your arts organization has an event or activity of which you think we should be aware, please contact us at least 3 weeks in advance. You can write us at The Art of the Matter, care of WFYI, 1630 North Meridian Street, Indianapolis, Indiana, 46202. Or you can email us at artofthematter@wfyi.org. You can also hear The Art of the Matter on wfyi.org.
Opening 3 different shows in 1 weekend would be a challenge for any theater company, but just imagine doing that with kids. That is exactly what the Young Actors Theater, or YAT, is doing in May. Travis DiNicola spoke with Artistic Director Justin Wade about the program and their upcoming shows.
First of all, what is Young Actors Theater? Because I want to be clear that it's actually kids who are doing the acting.
Yeah, it is kids. We're since 1976, Young Actors Theater has been committed to instilling confidence, creativity, and discipline in youth that sign up for its fall, spring, and summer programs. Charlotte Kaufman started Young Actors Theater in 1976 at Glendale Mall. She was at Glendale Mall for a year, and then she moved to the Athenaeum Theater. She bumped around for a little bit, was at the Harrison Center for a while, and the Old Centrum for a stint, and then moved back to the Athenaeum, only to go back to the Old Centrum. And then I took over during the Old Centrum years, and recently, 2 years ago, we moved back to the Athenaeum, and now we do our shows in the Athenaeum Theater. And we have a lot of side projects now that we can talk about in a minute that go on at the Fringe Building at the end of Massachusetts Avenue and at the Downtown Library and the Library Auditorium.
You've been involved with the organization now how many years or so?
I took over 6 years ago, and we've seen steady growth since that time. Presently, the 3 shows we're putting on have 150 young youth in them from 70 different schools in Indianapolis. And, you know, we're really glad to be doing theater.
Let's go at that number. How many schools? Sorry, many different schools? Did you say 70?
70 different schools in the Indianapolis area.
That alone is just amazing.
Place. Yeah, we're real proud of that, too.
Yeah, I mean, congratulations on
Thank
that.
Thank you.
Yeah, I mean, that is just fantastic. And all ages of kids, right?
This is kindergarten through 12th grade.
Okay.
So we've got Wizard of Oz will be kindergarten through 7th graders, 8th through 12th graders are putting on Little Women and Pride and Prejudice.
Okay. Now, with these shows, the kids that get involved with this, when they come to you, is it a matter of, like auditioning to get in, or they're essentially there to take classes and sort of the outcome of it's the play, right?
Well, we now have a new group called our Teens with a Z, Teens Issues. And our first Teens Issues group was a big success at the Fringe Building. We did Go Ask Alice, and we always pick an issue for each Teens Issues play, and this one was Go Ask Alice, so the issue was drugs. And our next Teens Issues play is going to be at the Library Auditorium. That group is where the kids come in and audition.
They audition to get in. And these are kids, for the most part, probably been working with you a while as well.
Usually, and then we get a couple kids that we usually don't see. But regular Young Actors featured shows, the kids always start by signing up for the class, and then everybody does a full-scale production that involves everyone that got in the class, because we have a waiting list now, but everybody that gets into the class, regardless of experience, regardless of how much theater they've done, they get at least one line in the full-scale production. So we're seeing all levels of talent mixed in together, the whole point, of course, being education.
You know, the training part of this is what I find so fantastic. And this is speaking of someone who, you know, I mean, I studied theater myself all through, you know, when I was in school, in high school, and then on to college, and actually, taught kids in theater during the summer quite a bit. And the fact is that there's almost no school in the city that provides theater training for kids really unless they're in high school. I mean,
right.
You know, a couple schools have some programs, more some of the private schools, but most schools have no theater until you get to high school. And even, unfortunately, some of the high schools don't have that now. No, some have some great programs, but especially for those younger kids, you know, the ones in, you know, like first through eighth grade, there's so many things you can learn by participating in theater. I mean, you learn about, you know, you learn about teamwork and self-confidence and, you know, speaking and literature and so many other things that this is just an opportunity a lot of these kids wouldn't get otherwise.
Oh, I agree. And I love the fact that they're able to come downtown into the inner city. You know, we're committed to staying in the inner city. We've got a contract with the Athenaeum, and we plan actually on staying in the Athenaeum and just adding to different areas only in the downtown area, because people ask me all the time if I want to move out of the downtown area. I like being centrally located due to the fact that we get kids from so many different places. But the educational aspect of Young Actors Theater is the key. I get people all the time who say, do you have people that make it in theater? Do you have people who make it in the arts? And I'm like, yeah, we have a few of those. But our main point is building future Indianapolis arts patrons and mm-hmm. people that are going to be doctors, lawyers, and firefighters that bring confidence, creativity, and discipline into their jobs in the Indianapolis community and communities throughout the United States. And this was one of the experiences to help them gain a skill set that's utilized in today's world.
No, I think it's an absolutely fantastic opportunity that you provide these kids. And you know, and as you said, the play is really the outcome. I mean, it's but it's only one part of the process. I mean, the classes that they go through, the training that they learn, the discipline that they learn, you know, you see that manifested in the play. And let's talk about the plays, though, just a little bit, because you do have a bunch coming up.
Right.
And, you know, first off, it's a great opportunity for anyone who's not familiar with Young Actors Theater, and maybe their kids are interested in getting involved with it. Come see the play first.
And that's something, you know, I always tell people.
Absolutely.
Call.
You know, but also what I want to say is, you know, oftentimes you hear people say, you know, well, you know, if it wasn't for the fact that, you know, he was my son, it was, you know, I don't know if I'd want to go to that play or, you know, whatever. But, you know, just because it is kids doesn't mean that the theater isn't high quality, too. I mean, you get people who, you know, just come because there's some really talented, fun kids that are performing.
There is. And, you know, when I say that there's all levels, I really mean it, because we have a lot of kids who don't have that much experience and a lot of kids who have a ton of experience. But if you see the final result in what these kids do, it's guaranteed to be entertaining. We always modernize all of our fairy tales, mm-hmm. so we have lots of twists in them. Like in our last version of Cinderella, instead of having the glass slipper, we used Converse All-Stars. You know, we don't have guys running around in tights and have this preconceived idea that some people have about theater.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know, each of the kids feels cool. They don't think that it's corny, and it comes off in a fun manner. It's not too long. We use lots of different technology to bring into the play. Like when you come in, you can see a preview on the big screen. The kids are utilizing YouTube and Facebook to show clips of what they do in class, and they all get into it, so the final product's awesome.
Well, tell me when the shows are, because you mentioned the three of them, Wizard of Oz, Little Women, and Pride and Prejudice.
The first weekend of May will be opening at the Library Auditorium for all three plays. And if you go to the Indianapolis Marion County Public Library's website, you can find, you'll see when each of those plays are. They are free at the Library Auditorium for the first weekend, and then in the second two weekends of May, that's when the main shows with the full set and full
costumes, the ones at the Athenaeum,
will be at the Athenaeum Theater for $10 a ticket. And you can find out each of the specific dates on www.yatkids.org.
Okay, cool. Very good. How do people get involved with being a part of this? We mentioned, of course, I mean, a great thing to do is just come see the show. But
I think that if you come see the show and you bring a youth that's interested in theater, they almost always want to do it if they're interested at all. And you know, our kids are also hanging out that are in the and watching each of the plays if that's not the night that they're performing.
Sure.
So you can always meet lots of the Young Actors people and the Young Actors Theater staff. We have a lot of young staff members from different colleges in Indiana, so they're always fun to be around too. We also have our summer full session coming up, so that's one thing that you'll find out about if you go see the play. Our summer full session will end in a full-scale production as well. And
is it like a summer camp for kids?
It is. It's Mondays, Tuesdays, and Thursdays, and Mondays and Thursdays at the Athenaeum Theater, and then at Tuesdays we go to the downtown library every Tuesday and have class there. We have a big partnership at the Learning Curve at the library right
sure.
now. And We also have a number of summer workshops that you can see on our website, and those workshops are Monday through Thursday from 6 to 8 p.m., so people that are really busy in the summer. It was really popular last year. Each workshop was awesome, and we've got musical theater, acting for the camera, improvisation, auditioning. There's each week of June and July has a different summer workshop that you can sign up for.
Now, for parents who are thinking about getting their kids involved, are there any scholarship opportunities, or how does that work?
We never in our entire history have turned a kid away other than because of a waiting list.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, if financial is the problem, then you just come talk to me or my sister.
Because you guys are a non-for-profit, right?
We are a non-for-profit, mm-hmm. and we do not turn anybody away due to financial need. We work with different people on different levels, no matter who they are. We do have some scholarships available, but please don't ever think about not looking into this because of finances. My sister and I also just started a new theater company called Wade In Theater. We did Where's My Money by John Patrick Shanley at the Fringe Building, and we're going to do another Wade In Theater production soon. Young Actors Theater's side projects are all at the Indy Fringe Building, the Downtown Library, or our main home, the Athenaeum, and those are our biggest partnerships. The kids, the teens especially, the 8th through 12th graders, are very into this side project thing that we've started doing. We've done some side projects for our teens' issues plays, and then every now and then we just come up with a play that we're going to do for the teen group that they can try out for.
Very cool. That's great. Just a really fantastic program. I always enjoy hearing about what you guys are up to and the new shows you have coming up, and a lot of new projects as well, it sounds like.
Oh, yeah, and they're always on our website. Like I said, www.yatkids.org. Our website's filled with information about the program, who my sister and I are. And, you know, I always say that Young Actors Theater is one of Indianapolis's best-kept secrets, because as many as people that know about Young Actors, there's all these people who do not know and understand that we've been doing youth production since 1976.
Right. Excellent. Justin, always a pleasure to have you on. Thanks so much for coming into Art of the Matter today.
Travis DiNicola with Justin Wade, Artistic Director of the Young Actors Theater. Little Women opens on the 14th, Wizard of Oz opens on the 15th, and Pride and Prejudice on the 16th of May. For more information, go to yatkids.org. yatkids.org. Please listen to The Art of the Matter again next Friday at 8 and Saturday at 4. I'll take a look at this year's Spotlight event.
I'll find out all about Canson art paper.
And find out how Freetown Village is celebrating Mother's Day and more. And, of course, we'll have our arts calendar we call
What'll We Do? So please listen next Friday at 8 and Saturday at 4 for The Art of the Matter here on WFYI for your information.
You've been listening to The Art of the Matter, made possible by the ongoing support from listeners like you, and from the Palladium at the Center for the Performing Arts, opening in January 2011. The Art of the Matter. Your hosts are Sharon Gamble and Travis DiNicola. Today's Art of the Matter was produced and edited by Travis DiNicola. The Art of the Matter on 90.1 FM, Indianapolis.